You're listening to Street Roots Radio. Street Roots Radio is a collaboration between X-Ray FM and local publication Street Roots. Street Roots is a nonprofit organization in Portland, Oregon that creates income opportunities for people experiencing homelessness and poverty by producing a newspaper and other media that are catalysts for individual and social change. I have here with me Street Roots correspondent Jenny Moore. Hi, Jenny. Thanks for being here.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So this week's edition of Street Roots is called American Carnage. 1 year into Trump 2.0, Street Roots takes a look at the damage. And in this edition, you have two really potent articles concerning ICE. The first one is called America First. Many American families struggle to survive under the cruel immigration policies imposed by the Trump administration. So in this article, you tell a lot of stories of some of the lives that have been impacted by ICE in the last year. And you're really able to show the human impact of these actions, how people's families and livelihoods are being affected. You think that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, definitely. I tried to hone it in as much as I could. It just seems like the pieces kept getting bigger, which is actually why we have two. It started as one piece, and then it was like, okay, there's quite a bit here. And there's actually a third one for the follow, I think the following issue planned, that a sidebar that didn't get it added. So there will be one more for me in the following issue as well.
Amazing. So could you first tell me about Sarah Matsuzaki and her partner, Aboyomi Daramola, who was detained by ICE?
Yes. So this is actually the story that started the whole piece for me. And I guess I'll first of all just say that this is not my normal beat. I don't normally write about policy, let alone immigration policy. So this was my first time, but I had heard about their story through Facebook, actually, through a mutual friend who had posted their story or their GoFundMe about what was happening. And so I reached out because I was like, you know, just wanting to kind of put a human face to the stuff that's actually happening. And this happened, her partner, Yomi, she refers to him as Yomi, was taken on in October 26th, which I've actually found was kind of a pretty common day that people were being arrested in Portland. So anyway, I'd heard about her story of her being very postpartum, like 3 weeks after having their third child, ICE agents showed up to their house, and you know, it happened very fast, as we've learned that it does. He was taken in their front yard in front of her two toddler boys, and didn't give her a ton of information, just said he was taking to the Portland ICE facility, didn't give her a number. There wasn't, you know, she didn't get a ton of information from them. And he was only there for a brief time before being moved. I believe he was moved to Tacoma. I don't need to give the specifics on their case, but some of them are in the piece, and he was basically moved very rapidly and now is in a Texas facility, which, and he's been there since October. He's still there. So that was the story that kind of wanted me to get involved, because as someone who also is a mom and has young children, and just knowing how much babies need and how much toddlers need their parents around, and just the care that postpartum moms need, I was very kind of like personally touched by it, just really just concerned about stories like that happening everywhere. But like, and it's like, okay, well, her partner was detained, but that affects an entire family. And this is like a really, you know, it's supposed to be a very tender time. And I just, yeah, the way that this ICE disaster, I'll call it, is affecting families, I think is really, really cruel. So that was kind of the way I thought of the piece was more focusing on like the cruelty that is being thrust upon families across the nation, but specifically in the Portland area. And yeah, that was what got me going with the story. And then it kind of expanded to, protest coverage, law enforcement. I had originally this story was going to come out before Christmas, and then it got pushed out because it got so big. And then the day of my new deadline was January 9th, which was like the day after Renee Good was killed. So it changed the. Again, I was like, this is a developing situation. And also, what a way to be introduced to writing about immigration at one a time. But so yeah, I don't know if that sums up anything of your an of the question you asked, but
Yeah, absolutely.
yeah.
No, thanks for all that. This is a really important story, and I do really appreciate the way that you tell it. And it's definitely very clearly focused around the harm to families and relationships that's being inflicted. You're saying it's like such a huge story and such a huge problem, and it's so expansive, and it goes on and on and on because it's so connected to like all aspects of our community and our lives. You also talk about some other families that have been affected, and you also talk about how Renee Good was not the first person to be shot or killed by ICE. So can you tell me more about some of the other people that were affected by ICE shootings in the last year?
Yeah, the couple that I mentioned in the piece was, let's see, September, I believe there was a shooting of someone who was undocumented, a father of two, Silverio Villegas Gonzalez. And it was a very similar situation to actually pretty much almost all of the ICE shootings where it involves a vehicle and them claiming that they shot in self-defense as people were trying to evade arrest because they're rightfully scared. And it was at a the shot was at close range. And then on New Year's Eve, just a little bit before midnight, Keith Porter, in the Los Angeles area, was shot by an off-duty ICE officer who acted as law enforcement when Porter was allegedly firing gunshots into the air in celebration of the holiday. So that was one that did not involve a car, and he was also killed. And that was again, on New Year's Eve. And then we had, that's what was interesting about the piece is we were reflecting on a year, but then by the time I was turning in the piece, it had been a new year and there had already been two more shootings in 2 days. So it was Renee Good's shooting, and then the following day, the shooting of a pair of people in Portland, out in East Portland. And I believe there was another one. It's been very hard to keep up with all of them since the new year, honestly, because of how fast it seems like it just seems like things are escalating quickly, both in the individual, arrests or detainments, and also just across time and the nation. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And during all of this, since you started working on this article in October, Matsuzaki has been without her husband and like trying to deal with all of this and probably try and get him back and also provide for her family. And on top of all that, she's worried about the health of her husband because he's been saying that the conditions are really not good. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, he has, given they've been he's yes, he's been in detention since October 26th, missed his youngest's first Christmas. And she's just, I guess, holding it together on her own. And she does have a GoFundMe that some people have been regularly donating to help her kind of, not get evicted and all that. So, and they do have an immigration lawyer, and they didn't share with me the type of relief that they decided on, but she said that decided on something that's what's best for their family. But as far as the conditions and the, I'm not sure when he'll be released. I don't know that they know that either. But he has said that, the blanket that he has to sleep with is like thinner than a sheet. It's like the food he said is so just salty beyond belief and, really just almost inedible. And then they have to pay for snacks basically from commissary if they don't eat the food that's served. Everything costs money there. Every phone call costs money. They don't have any privacy, even in the bathrooms and showers. He's told Matsuzaki that there's no windows, so they don't know what time of day it is. If they didn't have the clock, they wouldn't know what time of day it is. And this is consistent with various other accounts of what detention centers in this country are like. And it seems like a worse facilities and worse treatment than our regular prisons have. So it is very punitive, and it when you look into the experts, immigrant rights coalitions and stuff like that, in Portland Immigrant Rights Coalition, they say it is a system that's divine. It's designed to be cruel, and it's designed to make money, and it's designed to be cruel and punitive.
Yeah. There's obviously so much more to say about this article, and I highly recommend checking out this article. But is there anything else that you really want to say about it? I wish we had like an hour to talk
Yeah,
about this.
I know. That's the thing is, I guess I would just say, like, yes, read the articles, but let it just be like a jumping off point for more research and knowledge. And even if it's not like in your algorithm or on your feed, like try to find like what's actually going on the ground in places like Minnesota right now. And I think while it is like horrifying to like hear the stories and to hear people speak about what they've been through, whether it's protesters facing abuse or false arrests, citizens being arrested, anyone, immigrant or not, being mistreated, I think one thing giving me hope is that people are not standing for it and that people are organizing and doing a lot of the legwork that people in the system and people who are elected officials are not doing or not pushing for hard enough. So that does give me hope.
And that leads perfectly into your second article, which is titled Pushback. Portland protesters have given us inflatable frogs, naked bike rides, and record-setting streaks of daily marches. Here's what's keeping us hopeful in the face of growing authoritarianism. Such an important article as well. I really appreciate this. And since we don't have a super long time, if you could just like elaborate a little bit more on like a few of the main points that are keeping us hopeful right now.
Yeah, I think, oh, I'm just so grateful to live in Portland. because it really does, I feel like seeing people fighting back and protesting and boycotting and checking on each other and documenting ICE activity in their neighborhoods and all that stuff, it's basically about that, just on a small level, because again, I could have probably written like three more articles just about this because of how much is happening right now. But yeah, basically it talks about how the frog has become a symbol for protest, not just in Portland, but across the nation, which is from what I gathered in researching this, it's that when a specific frog named Seth Todd got allegedly intentionally tear gassed right into his what he called his frog hole, his frog vent. An officer gassed him right into his suit, and it became like a rallying moment for everybody. And it now there's like the Portland Frog Brigade, and like Maxine Dexter is like wearing frog earrings all the time and inviting, all these inflatable frogs and other animals now because all the frogs sold out, that now there has to be other animals. So it kind of talks about that and just kind of like how the power of like absurdist humor and creative protest can just kind of like reveal the truth of what's happening on the ground. Obviously, it's not all fun and games, and there's a little talk of that too, but so it's about the frogs, it's about other things giving me hope, younger people getting into the race for different local offices. That gives me a lot of hope because I think we need a lot of new leadership at every level. I think for a long time, like my generation has kind of just been like sitting out, like letting these like bureaucrats, letting people run the show for a very long time and not letting our voices be heard. And I think it's time for younger people to get in there and start, shaking the table a little bit. So there's talk of that. There's also protests, but also it's like about different people's accounts, making testimony in a Hillsborough City Council meeting. We talked about Manny Chavez, who is the teenager who spoke up and got very emotional and went viral for his really poignant testimony he gave in a Hillsborough City Council meeting. And like, that was not in an intentional thing he wanted to gain attention for. He showed up to support a teammate and also speak up for his community because he is fearful for his family members. So he didn't mean to go viral, but he did. But now he's, launched this other fund where now he's like getting organized and wanting to deliver groceries for people who are afraid to leave, and started a whole GoFundMe that's I think raised like $55,000 now. It's getting pretty close to its goal to provide just a swath of other things for families who have been impacted. So that's another thing that makes me hopeful is like just seeing the youths just being themselves, like making change and doing good for others. Like that brings me hope because I think there's a lot of talk of like, oh, the kids are not all right, and they're just like, spaced out on their devices all the time. They're not paying attention, So kids like Manny are giving me hope too.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, people are on their devices, but also plugged in and also trying to make
Right.
this place better.
Right. The teens are actually doing quite a bit on their devices, quite a bit
Yeah.
of organizing on their devices too, though. So,
I really appreciate
yeah.
you sharing your time with me and sharing these articles.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to an interview with Street Roots correspondent Jenny Moore. For Street Roots Radio, I'm Hannah Francis.